So when did you start at Microsoft? Did you come in as a developer? And how long have you been here?
I came here as a program manager originally 3 years ago. Oh, just coming up on 3 years ago, and just the end of March of 2002.
Okay.
It's hard to believe it's been 3 years. It really feels like about a year because
really?
Even though I know 3 winters have passed, but it feels like about a year because it's just gone by so fast. There's been so much
and
to
plus
do.
Plus the weather never changes, so... Yeah.
It rains, it suns, it rains again. You know, that's pretty much each day and each year. So, well, you know what that's like. You've lived here a while,
sure,
too.
Yeah.
But the fun was that I originally came here as a PM, as a program manager,
okay,
responsible for liaising with the community to make sure the community gets heard here, and I still do that.
Excellent.
But in addition to that, when after I've been here about 6 months, they gave me the job of managing, of running the team that that is redesigning the language extensions for .NET. And so that's been cool. I never thought when I came here I'd be involved in language design, and that's just where you end up. So that's one cool thing. People, I've just seen this over and over. People who have skills, just they get used in different ways they didn't expect. But, hey, here's a problem. Can you solve it?
Mm.
Oh, well, maybe. And you're left loose to run at it. So that's kind of a cool thing.
And you've clearly been in the C++ community for a long time.
That time has gone by pretty fast, too. I can't believe it's been 8 years now since I started in person attending committee meetings, and since then it's now the last few years I chair the committee, which actually doesn't give you more power. Most people say, "Oh, you run the committee." Well, organizationally, what you do is you give up a vote, so you no longer actually have any say in what goes on. You just organize it and make sure everybody gets heard. So that's actually kind of fun because I do enjoy that, making sure that everybody gets heard and everybody gets a chance to have their ideas come out. And the Standards Committee is an interesting place because you have such a mix of people from Bjarne, who's still always there, to people who have just joined their first time and it's their first time coming. They're seeing how it's going and still already making some contributions that are very valuable. So it's a cool mix of people. And so we get together. It's like a floating party. Twice a year you meet somewhere and you spread it around because people are from all over the world. And that's why people say, well, our next meeting, for example, is in Norway. So they say, oh, you get to go to Norway, this is like some junket. Well, there are a lot of people in Europe who find that much less expensive to go to Norway, or later on, another time we met in France or in Germany, than to fly to Sydney, Australia, which is where we met this time last year.
Mm.
So you spread it around a bit, and that way you get together face-to-face twice a year, work as much as you can, not in person, in between, and then you have a week of really heavy-duty time to try to get things done. Usually there's not much sleeping during those weeks, but it's worth it.
Wow. What's your favorite C++ book?
My favorite C++ book. You know, I have to say the C++ Programming Language 3rd Edition by Bjarne Streusgaard. You know, I have to say that.
Yeah.
It's actually possibly a tie between that and Design and Evolution, also by Streusgaard.
I ask because I see a whole bunch of books behind you.
Well, there are a few. Now, the fact that I say that has nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that Bjarne is my series editor.
All right.
So should we go meet some people?
Oh, here? Sure.
Oh, sure.
We're walking around. Are we going to go out this way?
Right here.
Hey.
Here's Brandon Bray. He's also a PM, program manager. I was just describing what that is.
Yep.
On the Visual C++ team. In fact, he's responsible for... He's the guy I described who runs things, but nobody reports to him. He runs the Visual C++ front-end team, but nobody reports to him. Don't you love that, Josh?
I do. So, I pretty much work on coordinating the schedule and all the work items for the team and writing the specifications.
And that's probably a pretty big job, right? How many pages are your specs for, like, would be?
Oh, I have one spec that I'm working on, which is the language spec, and that one runs about 300 pages right now.
Wow.
And the other specs that I work on run roughly 20 to 30 pages.
Wow. What's the biggest challenge of your job?
Just making sure I keep up with everything that's happening. There's so many things every day that I have to make sure I'm not missing, and one thing I miss, look over and you regret it.
Do you have any time management tricks?
Delegate.
Are you a David Allen guy? We're all David Allen guys. That's how we keep track of our email flows. But, Well, thanks for meeting us.
Oh, yeah. One thing I should add about Brandon is he is one of the five of us who specifically are on the language design team for these extensions. We've worked hard over the last couple of years in particular, and Brandon's since before that, to make sure they're the best they can be. And so Brandon's been sort of the glue keeping us all honest and taking care of things. Hey, you know, we actually need to implement this and schedule time for it. And you've been doing a lot of the work for the ECMA standard, because this is now being standardized with our partners, in part because the standard is there so that people know that we're not going to change it again. We really do think we got it right this time, and that this is something that we want to share. So Brandon did a lot of the work of that, and so he deserves a lot of the credit for getting that accomplished.
Cool. Are you a programmer yourself, too?
I'm one of the most fun programming jobs ever. I write code, it doesn't compile, and I file bugs. So then it has to compile. So
you get to dog food what the other people do.
Well, I write code before it could ever compile.
Okay.
The compiler has to compile my code.
Well, thanks.
Well, let me show you Jonathan Caves. Jonathan's a developer lead on the Visual C++ team. And here's Jonathan.
Yep.
He's been on the C++ Standards Committee representing Microsoft for longer than I have. Hi, folks.
Hi there.
Hi. In fact, you interviewed me. You were one of the people who interviewed me when I came in.
Oh, they hide behind the whiteboard. A very well-designed designed office.
Cool. If you can read this on the whiteboard, come in and apply for a job.
Like a bite in the whiteboard, and I have to go send me an email and give you a job. Yeah. With a slew of scrolls.
So what do you do here?
Developer. I work in the compiler. I've been doing that for 11 plus years now. Just fixing bugs and writing tests and trying to make the world safer for C++ developers.
Right. Now, you have one of these plaques behind you.
Yes.
I don't think we've talked about these plaques on Channel 9 before. What is that?
These are Shipit Awards. You get, when you arrive at Microsoft, you get one of these big blocks.
Yep.
And each time you ship a product, you get awards. That's VC Tool 2, 2, 1, 4, 5, 7, 6. Well, that's no. It gets weird.
Like all other naming.
This is for Visual Studio 1.0, which was contained as part of it, Visual C++ 6.0. And then so on it goes. They get actually get harder and harder to get, because used to get them for point releases.
Yeah.
We don't anymore. Now you're only getting for major products. So.
Now, how many lines of code do you write per Starbucks coffee cup? Right.
I have one cup of coffee a day.
Okay.
I've weaned myself down to one cup of coffee a day.
So fully leaded or decaf?
Fully leaded.
Is it fancy or tall?
It's tall.
Yeah. Wow, that's impressive.
Wow. When I first few years was here at Microsoft, they have a coffee machine in the kitchen in the building, and ours are about 6 or 7 times a day, filling up a large mug of coffee. When I started to shake, I realized that was a bit too much coffee to have in a day. So,
what are you proudest of in the product?
Oh, a lot of things. I mean, templates are one. Getting Boost to work is another thing. Recently, some of the designs for the managed extensions we're doing. Anytime you fix a bug which unblocks a customer, you're thinking of there's someone there in the world who's going to be pleased. So I mean,
do you hang out in these groups?
I do a bit. Yeah, not as often as I'd like. I do now and again. I go in spurts, but then I sort of end up having days where there's nothing but bugs to fix, and come five or 30 or 6, and I'm thinking, often enough, I'm going home. So, but I do a bit now and again. Yeah.
What's the most challenging thing that you're working on in Ruby, I guess?
Changing design? I've been not telling tales or something like that. I'm fixing a bug today. I fixed 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, something decided to remove the code from the compiler. So now we've suddenly discovered that the code was missing, so I'm putting back in again the code which I had added, which was removed in 2003. So that comes a bit of a challenge now and again.
since you've shipped more than the average employee's products, what's the secret to shipping good products? And what's the secret to shipping? That's one thing sometimes I wish I could teach all
the shipping is know your customer, know your product, be able to tell when it's ready to go. Big products are harder time shipping. And I sometimes think there's too much of a going towards getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger products. The problem with that is, especially for a compiler, we fix bugs. We'd love to be able to ship the compiler a couple of months later to customers with the bugs fixed, but we're in part of this bigger piece, so we have to wait until everybody else is ready. Especially with a compiler, where the bug might be blocking somebody, it'll be nice if we get to do faster releases, even if just the tools, not the whole IDE. But we'll see. So it's just the getting everybody. I mean, years ago, we had a development manager who used to talk. You ship it when the jello stops shaking.
Yeah.
And the bigger the piece of jello, the harder it is to get it to stop shaking. Stop shaking, because drive just the bugs fixed and just get ready.
One thing I was going to ask you, and maybe it's a good time to talk about, computers have changed a lot in the last 10 years, right? When I was in school 10 years ago, the average PC had, 8 megs of RAM.
Oh, yeah.
And even before that was a lot.
Oh, you had that much.
I had that much, but I had Steve Wozniak give me a donation. Macintoshes with, RAM was $450 a meg back then. Yeah. How has C++ changed due to the computer changing, right? My cell phone has 500 megs of RAM on it now.
Isn't that crazy?
It's totally crazy.
I want at least a terabyte on there.
I was walking around the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley, and my cell phone had more RAM than the entire History Museum had.
I think
this is a huge museum.
The interesting question there is not necessarily how much those things have changed C++. As in, C++ is dominant and is powerful and exists because of those larger computers and those larger problems. As people try to solve bigger and bigger problems, more and more data and more processing power, more and more resources, you got to be able to structure large software in a way that can take advantage of all that stuff and orchestrate it. You're not going to do it by writing assembler. And the higher level tools you use, you can do it in structured programming, but if you have OO, great. If you have frameworks, even better. And the higher level you can get to reuse stuff and to reason about your code and structure it, the better off you'll be at building these big systems. You've probably seen that happen. You've seen a very small C compiler grow and grow,
yeah. I mean, well, Herm's writing an article, which is very interesting about the multi-cores coming up. Now C++ compilers are going to have to change because you're going to be facing MMP issues whether you like it or not. And all of today's single threaded apps are really going to have to change. So I think the compiler, the machines are getting faster and faster and more RAM and more disk space, but where you do every release, we're doing our best to make sure we use up as much as that and more if we can. The compiler's getting bigger, and it's compared to when I started working on it, it's now huge. Really, it's a massive code base, and the language is getting more and more complicated.
One of the nice things, though, that as we have more resources that the compiler can use, though, is that we can make compiler generate better code, right? You have actually more time to do optimizations. If your optimization would take, let's say, 2 months of compile time, the programmer's not likely to wait for it. But once you're 20 times as fast and that takes a much shorter time, you can do it in an overnight build, then people use it. So actually our programs are getting more efficient in that way at the micro level because of that kind of thing. Yeah. Of course, people just keep on asking for more features, and they want managed runtimes, and they want frameworks, and they want everything else. And so you soak up the cycles in other places.
Yeah. Cool.
Certainly.
Well, thank you very much for
meeting
with us.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, speaking of Phoenix, this is Channel 9.
Yeah.
And here's a man who...
Just to prove that this is live Microsoft Reality TV, right?
Yeah, this isn't live, it's taped. So it's a Channel 9 interview about what we're doing in the C++ team, and they asked earlier about Phoenix and what we're doing at Phoenix. And, well, Chuck, you're the Phoenix guy.
Well, how long you got?
Oh, we might schedule for a future interview, but what are you working on? What is
Phoenix?
Yeah.
It's a framework for the next generation of compilers and tools for .NET and native. So, for example, you know C++. There's a native compiler that produces code for the different chip platforms, like x86 or i64. Oh, in the runtime, there's another compiler called the JIT compiler, right? Mm-hmm. And that one produces native code from a .NET assembly, right? So, in the past, we've actually had different teams working on these things, and different technology, and there weren't any sharing going on. So you had x86 being done by one team, you had i64 being done by a different team, and then you had all the native targets and all the WinSeed targets being done by external companies, the internal ones. So it also turns out that when you're writing a JIT compiler, you're reading in .NET IL, right, CIL, and you're producing native code, but there's a lot of tools that want to be hosted on that, right, where you might want to read them in, analyze them for security or correctness, or maybe do the rewrite tools. All this stuff shares a lot of commonality inside the tool itself. You have an internal representation that you're going to want to walk. You have a type system. You have ASTs. You have maybe an internal representation for data flow frameworks, error message stuff, traversals of all this. And each one of these groups is writing their own set of this stuff. And it's all very much shareable. So at one point in time, we got together a couple of years ago and said, well, we need to unify all the CodeGen stuff. Research said, hey, we'd like to leverage off of all this stuff because in research, they want to do some new optimization research or analysis, and they end up writing their own compiler right off the bat, right? They say, well, and sometimes it could be a different language. It may not even be a Microsoft language. Maybe it's ML or something. And they may come up with a real cool idea, and it pans out really well, and they publish a paper on it, but they can't give it to the product guys because it's in the wrong language, in the wrong runtime, and the wrong targeting the wrong chip. And they spend a lot of resources just rebuilding this infrastructure for that one paper, and then they throw it away, and they move on. Well, wouldn't it be great if they could just leverage off the product stuff and do their research on top of that? And then if it pans out and it's really, you know, usable by products, the migration path is pretty easy. Literally, it's like certifying the code that's already there because it's written on top of the framework in the right language. Another nice thing about the Phoenix itself is because we live in a world where we're transitioning over to managed, but we're not there yet, like our operating systems aren't written in it yet, there's a lot of our own tools that aren't written in it, you want to roll it out over time. So Phoenix had to be done in a way where we could compile the entire framework and any tool based on it, either 100% managed or 100% native. For example, a JIT compiler is going to be native. Somebody's got to JIT the JIT, right? So in the short term, until the runtime can actually handle a managed jitter, you have to deploy an unmanaged component inside of it. But you want that same thing shared between a managed backend that might present a third-party plugin environment. So in the future, you'll see things like the Visual C++ compiler backend, a third-party, like a profiler company or an analysis company or a security check company, could drop in a plugin that would be run every time you run your compiler. It would be added to the list of plugins that get run, and it somehow would have some feedback mechanism back into the IDE that says, oh, it's good or bad, some visualization thing. Not unlike what Prefast does today in a fairly rudimentary form. Now, this would be a whole third-party market involved in these. And the plugins can happen in any tool. I'm just using the back end as an example, but it could be, for people who are familiar with BBT, that would be another thing where you could plug in your own analyzer for Vulkan BBT. You could plug in your own analyzers on that because part of the framework also deals with binary reading and writing. So some of the people from MSR that we were working with, the BBT guys, who were looking at rehosting all BBT technology on top of Phoenix because there's so much overlap. And, of course, they always wanted access to compiler optimizations, but they were locked out because they were in their own internal form and didn't have access. So you get enough of these people who are all saying, gosh, I wish I had what you had. And we got a group of those, including, you know, Visual C++ guys, MSR guys, and CLR guys, to fire up the initial framework. That got incubated for like 2 years, and now we're moved back. We're back into the Visual C++ side. We're deploying the code generators now to try and replace the various code generators that are inside the products. And at the same time, we're looking at all the analysis tools like an EDT and stuff, see if we can propagate those up so we can start sharing all this data flow and all this checking I was talking about. A lot of the data flow you do for optimization is exactly what you do for analysis, static analysis, except maybe in analysis you can be optimistic, whereas and optimization may be pessimistic just to make sure that you get correct code. Whereas if you have somewhat noisy error, it may not be too bad. It's It's something they'll probably want to tighten up, but it's not 100% there.
Interesting.
And, you know, there are lots more things that we can talk about all, as far as deployment goes and deployment options. But there's tons of people coming up to us all the time, hey, can you do this, can you do that? Yeah, we can do it, but really what we want to do is provide a framework that you'll turn around and say, okay, I'll do it on top of that. So part of this is also reaching out to academics. So Phoenix is being deployed at first as in a research development kit, which is a managed library with like 6 megabytes of documentation that go along with it about the APIs and stuff and the usage, a bunch of samples, and then researchers can see, okay, here's what's available today. And then we're looking for individual funded projects where they'll write a tool or a compiler based on Phoenix, or in some cases we're looking at actually creating compiler coursework based on it, like AHO and all kind of stuff.
Are you going to be at the PDC?
We're probably not going to go broad until we have these individual things handled, because we can only absorb so many clients at a time. But the thing that we've been focusing on are the faculty summits that happen once a year for MSR, and that's where we deliver these RDKs. And even of those, we don't give it out to all 300 people who show up. We basically look for targeted people who are actually going to sit down and use it. There's probably some negotiation that happens, because eventually there is a goal to release sources, to create a shared source and a community around the framework. And it'll be a lot easier to create this research community if, in fact, we do ship sources of some sort. Maybe not all of them, but at least a lot of them, so that people can look at it, they can leverage off it, they can share their new ideas with each other, and create even, you know, a forum outside of the company where people are doing Phoenix-related research or on top of Phoenix, but they're not really going through us. We're not a clearinghouse. The upside to the researchers, though, is if you are on Phoenix and you write a plugin, and you want to prove your paper, you don't have to go to run spec. You can drop it into one of our builds. We can actually build Windows with your new register allocator or whatever it is and prove whether it really is good or not on something other than just spec, right? Mm. So they're very excited about the fact that you can publish results based on real-world code instead of just spec, or maybe both side by side.
Cool. Well, thanks. We should get a whole interview and demo. And
plus, I'd probably want Cherokee involved, too.
So oh, sure. Well, we'll come back and talk about it.
Okay. Absolutely.
And thanks for pausing with your latte and brownies.
Exactly.
Latte.
Hey,
what are you drinking today?
Every day, like 3 times a day, mochas, and then brownies after 2 because they're 2 for 1.
Nice stuff.